So let me introduce now our next speaker, who is Nasir Navab. Nasir Navab is a professor of computer science at Technical University Munich and at Johns Hopkins University. He is the founder and director of the Computer-Aided Medical Procedures Laboratories. His current fields of interest include patient and process-specific robotic imaging, medical augmented reality, and computer vision. Nasir is a fellow and member of board of directors of the MICAI Society. He is an associate editor of the IEEE Transactions on Medical Imaging and a member of the editorial board of the Medical Image Analysis Journal. He received the Siemens Inventor of the Year Award in 2001 and the Smith Medical Innovation Award in 2010 and has co-authored papers which received awards in prestigious conferences. Nasir will be the General Chair of MICAI 2015 to be held in Munich next year. Nasir.
Thank you. It's again an honor to be here and an honor to talk after this row of incredible talks this morning and this afternoon, including the supervisor of my PhD. I am even afraid of talking in front of him now. So basically, Nicola asked me to talk about augmented reality in operating room. I thought maybe I start very quickly with the background of augmented reality. Let me put a clock so I don't talk too much then. So basically, we know all about the history of medical imaging in the last century, which suddenly started from X-ray, but by the end of the century we had many different modalities, and as we are talking, new modalities are coming up. This exposed the physicians, and in my particular interest, also surgeons, with a lot of information that now they have to use. And they, as my wife is also a medical doctor, and she says that she still has that few minutes with every patient. So we need to summarize that, we need to provide that in the most efficient way, and augmented reality is one of the way. Unfortunately, currently, still in 80% of the operating rooms, the CT is visualized as we see here, just as a set of 2D slices on the either on a white light board or on a screen, but still is really 2D. There are many different screens around the operating rooms, and they are now in some interventional rooms up to 8 displays in the operating room. And they are not where the patient is, they are all around the space, and this makes the whole thing unnecessarily complicated. I go a little bit quickly since 90s about some of the work in augmented reality. Exhaustive review is in this paper. I just mentioned some of them. One of them was just mentioned by Dave Hawkes, one of the early works in 1996 by his team, where they augmented a Zeiss microscope with, for example, in this case of this image on the right, with angiographic 3D reconstruction, CTA. So they tried to do that in 96. Later on, Birkfellner in Vienna used this varioscope to also augment some maxillofacial surgeries with a lot of tracking and integrated display in this microscope. In 96, also at Harvard, with Ron Kikinis and Grimson, they also used an external camera to augment the, during the surgery, they tried to augment the preoperatively segmented images onto the display of a monitor. Later on at INRIA and IRCAD, Stefan Nicola and Luc Soler and others, they also tried to use external cameras and take the preoperative data and superimpose it on the patient in those external monitors. The idea, probably the the one that we really call augmented reality in, you know, the fanatics of augmented reality. They talk about head-mounted display. And probably the very first drawings and ideas come from UNC, Henry Fuchs and Andrea Staate, etc. They tried to do that in 92, 93. However, the power of computation was, if you compare it to now, it was negligible. So the results were not satisfactory. The community had to wait about 8 years for Frank Salver and his team at Siemens Corporate Research to create this ramp system, which from my point of view, for the first time, was allowing really real-time augmentation of preoperative data onto patients or phantoms. We tried in collaboration with them to bring it into some applications. So this was back in 2004, 2005. We were using the ramp system and volume rendering and different techniques to bring it into augmentation of patients' anatomy. The surgeons got really super interested in that, and they were so interested that they asked us to do the first series of cadaver studies with them. They liked it, they found it intuitive, etc. But we did a series of cadaver studies, and it was the best failure we had ever had. They tried and they failed. And this was really great because we had about 12 of them who were very frustrated. They liked the technology, they liked the gadget, but it didn't function correctly in their im-nail procedure with cadavers. So they had to sit around us and discuss why. Why didn't this work? And at that time, one of the major reasons, which was also a blockage for all other previous results that you saw that didn't come true, one of the problem was perception, 3D perception. As soon as you see a virtual on top of real, like those vasculatures in microscope, you see them floating. Your brain says, this thing is floating. Even though it's very well computed in stereo to be at the right place, it's floating. One experience we did was, We put a virtual candle, and people had to turn it on with a real stick. And they could do it, all of them. As soon as we would put a wall between them and the virtual candle, none of them could do that. Because just even though the visualization was exactly the same, but the depth perception was messed up because of this augmentation. So we started to analyze the SIGGRAPH community, who had done beautiful visualization and nice mathematical models for that, for graphics, and tried to introduce it or model it for augmented reality. So what we did, we combined the focus of attention with ghost viewing, which basically weights in this case, we weighted the transparency of the video as a function of normal to the surface computed from CT, and the angle of view computed by tracking the head of the viewer. And then we had this combination where you could see the high curvatures, in particular if you were tilted towards them. And then you could also reduce the opacity as you would go away from focus of attention. And that would implicitly bring in the concept of parallax. And therefore, they could see, they could see the ghost of the structure. If there was high curvatures, they could see it. And then their angle would defer the viewing. And suddenly, the impression was much more realistic, and they could get a better depth perception. Then another problem at that time we had is that if I have virtual, for example, CT on the patient, now, how can I interact with it? Usually, if you have a 3D on your screen, you move it around, and you see it from different point of view. Now, if my 3D is superimposed on the patient, either I have to go under the bed to see it from behind or to rotate the patient. So we found out this problem to be the same as the one of dentists, and then we took the problem of the solution of dentists and we apply it to in our case. So we took a wireless mouse which would control a little mirror like the dentist mirror, and then while keeping the augmentation, we could totally analyze in 3D the 3D structure from arbitrary point of view. So you could either manipulate it or you could leave the mirror inside and have arbitrary view. This is very different than projections because, in fact, you're completely used every day to look at the mirrors and localize objects. This is one reason, and the second reason is that you also have the cue of kinesthetic. Basically, your muscles movement is correlated with your vision, and that would give you additional 3D impression of the environment. Then we brought it to people. We wanted to have it used in every day in museums, in education, in training of medical doctors. So thanks to Kinect and the work of Kriminezi and their group, we used Kinect instead of all our complex tracking of head-mounted display, and then created this magic mirror, which would include, which would superimpose the virtual world onto the patient. And then we brought it actually to the public. This was used last year by about 2,000 visitors in an IDEA museum in Essen, in north of Germany. A lot of kids and elderly, all the ages, and including the two of the ministers of Germany. So they had also fun playing with the system. Now, all this brings preoperative data, or CT data, or anatomical map, or anatomical atlases, on to the patient. But is this the solution for intraoperative imaging, or for intraoperative augmented reality? During these years, as we were working really hard to bring the solutions into OR, more and more we found out that there is a problem. There is more of a basic problem. Basically, I had to really understand the clinical procedure, why we have this 20 years of medical studies before having our experts. The reason is the complexity of what they do. So basically, usually when they take a patient, they define a diagnosis, they do first a diagnostic, and then they have a model of that diagnostic. I always mention my wife because when, as computer scientist, I was very excited about this, cards with all the data of the patient, well encrypted, and having the patient having it with a code and being able to access it. When I talked to my wife, who's a medical doctor, would you like that? Her answer was definitely not. And I was really shocked. I said, why? And she told me, oh, you're giving me tons of data, but I still have 5 minutes with my patient. You give me tons of responsibility, but you're not helping me. What should I look for every single patient? What happened when the patient was 12 years old? Should I know the allergy of every single person? Should I know everything? How can I do then in 5 minutes make a decision and not be responsible for not missing a data? Then I started to tell her what happens if you make a guess of a diagnostic, I have a computer model of that, and then I gather the relevant data out of that data and I present it to you. Then she told, now you're talking. You're talking something that's a little bit of sense. So basically they first look at some of the data and feedback of the patient. They start to have a guess of diagnostic. For that diagnosis, they start to do VPH. And this VPH, as we saw today with a bunch of series of incredible work, both the community, Europe, Japan, Australia, US, and companies have invested huge amount of money on this and huge amount of efforts since, I would say, 70s, 80s, when we started to have CT, MR, PET, etc. So this part has been enormously worked on for many, many years, and there has been business behind it. What happens is that here, this, until about 10 years ago, we could not do much here, and I explain you why. Mostly because this is much more complex imaging than this one, because here the time is resolution, here the time is life. So it's very different requirement. And therefore here, the advances in international community or in industry was minimal. If you look at the mobile C-arms or X-ray C-arms, Between Röntgen and 20 years ago, the differences are not much. I mean, they are in terms of resolution and speed, etc., but it still is more or less the same kind of device as compared to the requirements of operating room. Ultrasound, very primitive. Doctors still have to hand it. They can only decide themselves what they can see or they can visualize. The dynamic imaging, which is user-dependent. So what do they have inside the operating room? Not much. Compared to what we have here, we don't have much. And I think it's time, and now the power of computation and everything we do, we can make a huge impact here. And I think it's the time to spend also effort and time here and do real interventional imaging instead of always trying to register the preoperative data. For me, the preoperative data is good for planning. It's not good for interventional imaging. Interventional imaging needs real-time, intra-patient-specific, process-specific. These are the real differences with preoperative data. You have to be patient and process-specific. You cannot do a general, you don't have time and space to do a general imaging. You have to do specific, not only to the patient, not only to the procedure, to each single phase of procedure. And that makes it extremely hard and extremely complicated. And that makes its dependence to surgical process model enormous, because it's not a general imaging. It has to be in coordination with that in here. And therefore, also, you know, the kind of visualization we were doing for radiology on a workstation, look at the data, take your time. Here is different. We really need advanced data presentation in real time, automatic. They can't even, you know, if you ask a surgeon around, you know, having a coffee, ask him, do you do two clicks inside an operating room? He tells you yes. If you go into his or her operating room when, you know, his hand is bloody in the middle of the surgery and tell him, can you do two clicks? You can't even ask the question. It doesn't make sense. So the situation is very different. So the difficulty is that here he is using the knowledge, doing, making a decision, doing an action. And you have to follow this loop automatically. You can't. He cannot take the time to interact with you. Anything you do which takes more than a few seconds, half a second, maybe sometimes a minute, two, is not acceptable. So we come, from my point of view, you cannot do interoperative AR, you cannot do interoperative imaging even, if you don't understand for each process the surgical workflow, the human roles, and the target device. And this is not understanding it, writing on a paper, discussing it in a meeting in Siemens, Philips, GE, etc. This means you have to have electronic and computerized models of this, and you have to have mapping tables which tells you at each step who needs which information from which menu of one of your devices or a combination of your devices, who in this team of surgical team needs it, for what it needs it, what is its importance. If you don't do all this work, and if this is not digital, you know, it would be a good publication, a good demo, but not really used inside operating room. So some of the imaging that we started to do inside the operating room, and we learned how to learn also the workflow. One of them was this mobile C-arm that, it was a simple idea at the intersection of some communities. I was flying back from ISMAR. It was a conference on mixed reality in Yokohama. And at the same time, I was working for Siemens Erlangen for calibrating the C-arm, having a camera attached to it here and here. And as I saw the head-mounted displays at Canon Research Center, where they had, like, Google glasses, they had a camera here and a prism or a mirror here, and they were superimposing the optical see-through with the images or the displays they were taking on the airplane, I started to think about my project at Siemens, and I thought, okay, if I consider that the view of the user is the X-ray view, then I can do exactly what Canon does with their head-mounted display by putting the mirror here and the double mirror here and the camera here, and now I would have a real-time augmentation of X-ray and optics without any registration, without the need to put markers on the patient. These two views would always be the same. And we started to play around with it. But it took a long time to bring it into operating room because we had to really understand the workflow. And for each phase of the workflow, we had to understand how they could use the technology, how do we have to augment the technology for them to be using it on a regular basis. And fortunately, after about 10 years, unfortunately, we had 50 patients in trauma surgery department in the center of Munich, and this 14 surgeons did these surgeries, and 11 of them had never seen the system. They saw the system for the very first time. But it was so intuitive, so simple, that they started to use it after about 3 minutes explanation of Dr. Euler, head of the surgery department. So this was the first part, was positioning. They would position, and then the X-ray would be taken. Now, once the X-ray is taken, if you don't move the patient, then you can start working on it without getting X-ray. You can start guiding yourself directly and plan for your surgery. If you do, for example, drilling, and you're really moving the patient, then the markers could allow you to tell you that your X-ray is no more valid, or how to go bring back the patient to a position where you took the X-ray. So then we needed tracking just to make sure that the X-ray we have taken is valid still. And then some of the applications, the doctors started to use it. For us, it was interesting because we had not thought about it, but they really liked it for that. For example, they started to define the entry point and define the cut and optimize the cut and discuss it with their assistant before cutting it. And this was something that we thought is not very interesting, but they were super interested in that because they were telling a cut in cut is hard to heal and a shorter cut is more optimal. So this was the first version. Then we started to discuss and we saw that this visualization of, you know, X-ray on top of a patient and on top of hand of the doctors, even if the X-ray is taken preoperatively or not at the same time as optical, is not a nice visualization. And we started to talk about relevance-based visualization, and now we used, again, the work of Antonio and you know, the random forest to start learning what the doctor wants to see. When they are doing such procedures, the doctor would tell me, you know, I want to see this pixel, not this pixel. So they were now doing a bunch of clicks, what they want to see and what they don't want to see. And then the random forest would allow us to start, instead of this, for each pixel deciding whether this pixel should be visualized from X-ray or from optics. So this would be now a much more intuitive augmentation with a real-time classification of pixels in terms of the better visualization or relevance for the doctor. These days, we are also using Kinect, so we also have 3D information, so we can do much more than before. Some of this work would be presented on Friday, on Saturday in IPCAI in Fukuoka, and then we could go farther. Now, patient entropy-specific imaging is a big subject for me, and I think, I hope, that in the next 5-10 years, our operating room would be full of imaging and full of molecular and anatomical imaging, which would be patient and process specific. And in order to do that, you need speed, you need flexibility, but you also need reproducibility, reliability, and relevance. And I'll talk about some of them. So, fortunately, as you know, can you let me know if I'm 10 minutes before? Dave was talking about the importance of working with this industry and clinic at the same time. We have a project together with KUKA and Siemens and a smaller company where we are trying to bring a bunch of robots with imaging inside the operating room. So, I have to disappoint some of the robotic guys. I am not in favor of robotic surgery as much as it helps us, a community, to get reputation. I am more in favor of robotic imaging because I believe that the hardest work in surgery is not cutting, is deciding what to cut. So this decision has to be based on a lot of information, including anatomical and functional information. And that is much more a job of a robot, and you will see why. So the idea is basically, for example, I get one example in which we worked a lot. We have a SPECT imaging for diagnostics. So this is the SPECT of Siemens maybe one of the older ones, but the system rotates around the patient and gathers billions, about 8 billion or over 8 billion events, and then does a reconstruction of SPECT. Now, inside the operating room, using this system is impossible. You can't use such a system inside the operating room. That doesn't give you access to the patient. It's too expensive, and is also taking too long to do. But, you know, this is not for that. This is for general imaging. Why do you want to bring it to the operating room? So instead of that, we took just simple, at the beginning, we started with a 1D sensor, which we were moving around, and we were tracking it with our computer vision technology, tracking technology, and with less than about 40,000 event, we were starting to do tomographic reconstruction of target of interest. I'm not claiming that we beat SPECT. We are not supposed to beat SPECT. We are not going, if you know, if you're lying on an operating table and the surgeon does not know what he's looking for, you should not be lying there. So usually, if you're lying there, the surgeon knows what's going on. They only want real-time feedback of where the nodule is, where it's now moved, is now this injection that they have made previously is, you know, it's showing the functional there. He's not doing the diagnostics. So therefore, you know, when we talked to our nuclear medicine department, they were very suspicious about going from billions to 40,000. But later on, they were our strong partner in creating a company and bringing this device by a company called Surgikai out of our chair in nuclear medicine, where we were combining all of this. And since we were a fan of augmented reality, in addition to tracking, we also put a camera here integrated, which would allow us to use augmented reality at the same time. So the idea was now I move this around and inside operating room, and in about 2 to 3 minutes, we will do the reconstructions on sentinel of lymph node, and this would be used for excision of the sentinel lymph nodes, or what is called SNLFB, sentinel lymph node biopsy. So this, we brought it into hospitals. Many hospitals had it. It got CE certificate in 2009, FDA in 2011. And this is one example that you can see that they in this this is an study where they use the system, but they can't. They are not allowed to see the images until the the procedure is done. This is for verification whether the system could have helped them. And in this case, they had left one nodule that if they could see the image, they would have taken it out. So anyhow, this is, they have the option of seeing it in augmented reality, or they can also do it virtual reality by moving their probe. They can go around it, they can do measurements. And we have done a full study after about 100 acquisition of surgeons for many patients and different surgeons. We did a publication where we compared where they go, and they had no idea about our study, just to let you know, because we didn't want to influence them. And we saw that in some phases of the surgery, in particular in the beginning, they are interested in augmented reality. In some phases, they are interested to do measurements and distances, and then they go to virtual reality. And then again, they go back to augmented reality at the end, where they are almost sure that they have done the right thing. Now, in this system, we brought an preoperative system into an intraoperative system. It was very attractive. Now they have imaging, nuclear imaging inside the operating room. But if I do it by 5 different surgeons, I may get 5 different results. And if the injection is done 6 hours before, or 8 hours before, or 4 hours before, a nuclear medicine expert may know how to do the acquisition. A surgeon is harder. So if you want to have reproducibility, but also flexibility and patient specificity, then you need to go to robotic. And there you go to robotics. If you go to robotics, then the weight doesn't matter. So since the robot can get also 5 kilo during a surgery, then I can put a gamma camera instead of a gamma probe, and then in less than a minute, we can do a tomographic reconstruction with the robot. Now, we also published together with our mathematician students how we can now use the preoperative data to design the actual acquisition in an optimal way, so in the fastest way, we do a targeted acquisition. Now we can do that and get this reconstruction. Now we move to ultrasound. Ultrasound is a very similar story. I want to do the ultrasound, and I want to have my hands free to do the surgery, but I need a safe robot. I need to make sure that ultrasound shows what I want to see. I need to have a control. So we use this lightweight robot of developed in DLR, but commercialized by KUKA, which has a lot of, you know, for example, it can go at a constant pressure, is quite safe, and we can do a compounding and get 3D ultrasound. Now, if I do that, the whole process would change, and we copy that from radiation therapy, because that's the only place where the imaging is not certified. What is certified is that the imaging or the radiation fractions can confirm what they was designed in the simulation. And we want to create the same certification, which means imaging would be different for every single patient. But what is actually proven is that if I do based on CT, PET, ultrasound, etc., if I do decide what to image, then I can compute my inverse kinematic and guarantee that the patient would be imaged the same way that I decided to do preoperatively. So then we can do multimodal registration free, because multi-robots would do the acquisition. They would be kissing each other. We call it kissing each other. And then they would know how in which space they are working. So we are continuing. Oh, sorry. And now this part becomes very interesting. The idea is that if I have five robots, I don't want the doctor to control this robot and then go control that imaging and then control this imaging. The idea is forget about joystick, forget about user interfaces. The doctor plays around with the images. We compute the inverse kinematic. So I show you two examples. One, a simple one, where some companies, they are doing some version of it also, but we are doing it very nicely and very elegantly, I would say, is that the doctor is playing around with a preoperative CT, telling which view he needs inside his intervention, and we are computing the inverse kinematic. And we are, so preoperatively, he says, I want five views of four different phases of my surgery. He does it on DRRs, we decide, we compute the inverse kinematic, and we provide it to him. Now, a little bit more complex is for MR-based ultrasound visualization. So the doctor on the 3D MR tells, this is the slice that I'm interested to do a B mode on. Then the robot, thanks to, again, Kinect and Microsoft, is tracked, is doing the acquisition, but this phantom is not a compatible phantom, so we have to go to a MR ultrasound compatible. Then the robot first, because it cannot do one too many registration after deformation, the robot first does a volume acquisition. Then this volume is compounded. Then this volume is deformably registered to preoperative MR. And this deformable registration allows us to see the B mode that the doctor selected in preoperative MR corresponds to which little fan of B mode inside operating room. And this is a proof that the excellent work can be rejected at Nikkei. So now another one which is accepted at Nikkei is we can also do very similar, but for the first time actually, this is the very first, I think, worldwide SPECT CT, which can be done interventionally. So there is the Chromium CT, this is a Philips one, goes around the robot, which holds a joint phantom. Then we compute the registration between the robot and the Chromium CT. Then we verify in this experiment that the two imaging are co-registered, and we see that is less than 1 millimeter error. Now the CT, Chromium CT, is done interventionally. And once the tomographic reconstruction is done, the system plans a trajectory of based on the target you define for this patient. The system plans an acquisition with the robot. And then the acquisition is done. Okay. The acquisition is done. This is the delay of the video. And now we have SPECT CT inside operating room. Again, image based. And now this is
demonstration of ultrasound gamma registration, where again with this system we are doing now gamma and ultrasound co-registered. And this opens a new way. They want even to replace SLNB with such a things where they see multiple nodules in ultrasound, but they can decide from which one, which has activity, to do the biopsy, and therefore reduce even the, you know, the need for excision. So it could dramatically change everything. But now if inside operating room I have multimodal, how do I do this complex visualization? Oh, sorry. We also do it for in a European project for pancreas. We found to be very difficult to do ultrasound gamma in PET in pancreas. So we decided to first do prostate. So this consortium has designed a joint ultrasound PET detector, endotoph PET project, where we try to do this now ultrasound PET inside with a sensor behind the patient in prostate. But now if we do all this multimodal inside operating room, how do I fuse it? Usually, you know, already in an angio room there are 6 displays. Soon we need to have 10. It's not functional. Now if I want to put them together like PET-MR and PET-CT, is this optimal? It's true, it's additional information, but also it's disturbing a good information in the other one. How can I make a fusion which maximizes the relevance? So we started to do that by talking to the doctors and do a machine learning on this OCT IVUS registration. Enough to find out it's very hard to do that. It's very hard to get the feedback to really find out. So we thought we need a tool to be able to do this acquisition and do machine learning. This is a paper which got accepted in IEEE, a collaboration with Siemens Corporate Research, supported by them. And I think it's a breakthrough from my point of view. First of all, in 3D ultrasound visualization, but second, in learning what we need to do for relevance. So the way we do that is that we say, you know, people in SIGGRAPH community, sometimes they say, we don't want to come to medical because visualization is not alone. It depends on a lot of filters and a lot of segmentation, a lot of registration. Why not bring those intelligent procedures into your visualization? So the idea is that we have now a bunch of predicates. This is gradient magnitude, vessel layer, this is vessel carotid, this is SNR range, skin layer, muscle layer. These are all complex procedures. But then we make a histogram, and the doctor simply says, I'm interested in this area, and we go to our pixels and we adjust automatically the level or the weight of these predicates. And suddenly from a 3D ultrasound, we could get significant or relevant information that the doctor needs. For example, here we want to focus on carotid artery and its bifurcation, and therefore the doctor comes and says, I'm interested in vesselness, and I'm interested to see more of that. And then the system starts, for each pixel, we have a bunch of predicates computed, which are complex procedures. And then the visualization. Now, the idea is that we want to provide this system again to a large number of surgeons with a pad that interactively they adjust the best visualization by just playing around with these things. And then we compute all the parameters, and then we do machine learning. And the hope is that in 3 years we could have optimal solutions for complex visualization of complex data in multimodal, but based on automatic feedback, which is based on image and not based on setting up parameters. So, you know, I think it's a very, very long way. We are just at the beginning. We are setting up. That's why I'm also at Johns Hopkins. And that's why I also love to work with IRCAD. We are trying to do this robotic imaging at the 3 places, hopefully, and having robots doing intelligent imaging inside the operating room. A disclaimer is that it may not be a perfect wheel, but I hope it's a state-of-art wheel. And a lot of thanks goes to a large group of, this is actually our 10 years anniversary, of a set of, you know, scientists, senior scientists, postdocs, and a lot of students, and a lot of funding. And you can find all of our papers in many papers in MICAI or in TMI, and we are organizing the MICAI of next year in Munich, and I can promise you a lot of fun. and it's in October, and we are adding a half a day of industrial day and direct transmission of surgeries inside MR, inside MICAI. So thank you, and for more further information, you can also see our website. There are all the videos and papers. You can fetch them over there. Thank you.